My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Best Quality Vacuum, the duck feed show about Breaking Bad, El Camino, and Better Call Saul.
And this episode, Alpine Shepherd Boy, was written by Bradley Paul, directed by Nicole Castle, and it originally aired on March the 2nd of 2015.
Yeah, a weird episode. It's like comedy, 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 intense drama, baton handoff. Like, guess what? This is a multiple protagonist show, actually.
Yeah, yeah. We kind of catfished you with the first four episodes or so.
Yeah, it happens almost literally. Like, the scene's really interesting.
It's the business card. Happens. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and just like, oh, yeah, it's like a magical business card. And whoever has it is the protagonist of the show. A bunch of deleted scenes of Walt having that in his wallet.
It's literally Garth calling the camera over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, like, pretty good episode, though. Pretty fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of has it all, you know?
Yeah.
Basically, after that billboard stunt, Jimmy gets a bunch of clients. It does not go along, you know, does not go the way he wants it to. Mm-hmm. You know, a bunch of them are not great, but they're funny. We get to go kind of along with this. And we get to see the fallout of Chuck sneaking out to grab the newspaper.
A very consequential newspaper theft is what we have here. Because he gets arrested. He gets tased.
Yeah, not good for somebody with fake diseases.
Right. Yeah, and he explicitly told them not to bring in the tasers.
Yeah, and why did they disobey him?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's fucking Chuck.
He cited laws.
Yeah, the great scene, you know, mm-hmm. that. And then we have the pass off to Mike. Mike is going to be our secondary protagonist, basically up until Gus shows up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Nacho gets kind of more of a spotlight.
Yes.
Through this. This episode was really named Jello, but Kraft wouldn't give permission. That was in service of a stunt of having every episode end with O.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit, guys?
We are across multiple shows very against the gimmick of a season's episodes all having a theme.
I don't understand it. I don't understand what would be cool about that. Like, you could notice it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess that's the thing. It'd be cool because you'd see it and you'd be like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
But then what? Like, so what?
Yeah.
You know?
It's a fun little writerly exercise is the thing that is fun for the person who did it. And then something like this comes along. The notoriously litigious Jello Biafra told them, you guys can't do this.
Yeah. Copyright Uber Alas, not allowing it. I'm just trying to imagine, like, the saddest thing in the world, which is one of these writers, like, nobody really picking up on that, you know? And then one of the writers trying to hint, you know, but without making it too obvious, being like, oh, shit. I didn't even do this on purpose, but I just noticed.
What? Oh, wow.
All the episode titles end in O.
That's kind of cool. What a remarkable coincidence.
Yeah. I just thought it was kind of neat. You know, you end up with the guy, you know, you end up with the host explaining that he thinks the Metalloid Maniac is cool. You know, I think so. I just think it's pretty cool. There's something heartbreaking to me about it. And then the fact that it can just get shut off by something this simple.
Yeah.
And then you just have a season where nine of the episodes end with O.
They couldn't find another word that ended with O that would describe this?
Yeah. like, why would you do this to yourself? Yeah. You know, just, it's a, frustrating. Not a whole lot of production trivia on this, except this is some newcomers. This was written and directed by people who did not work on Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we got our first all original kind of top of line crew going on.
They do a fine job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get into it.
Yeah. Our teaser here, the opening of the episode, is the cops coming to Chuck's place because his neighbor, a cop herself, one must assume, called the police to report this exceedingly petty theft.
Yeah. It doesn't look like she even came out to grab the money. I don't know that she knows that he left money. I think she's weirded out by it because he was wearing the space cloak.
Yeah, I would be alarmed at that.
Yeah. Like, one of the things that the show eventually, you know, that starts revealing here and that Jeppy, your name is Jimp. Jimmy starts weaponizing against Chuck is how unusual Gen Pop would find his whole deal.
Yes.
You know, he uses that in a way to say, like, listen, I fucking put up with this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you are lucky to have me and everyone indulging this. Yeah. In the real world, this wouldn't fly.
Right.
And it doesn't. And that ultimately leads to Chuck's downfall. This is an example of that.
Yeah. So the cops show up and Chuck pretends not to be there, but they tell him, hey, we can see your shadow through the peephole, you idiot. Mm-hmm. And Chuck tries to explain his condition, saying, hey, I can't come outside. I can't go outside. They point out the flaw in that. And then he starts filibustering about search and seizure law.
Yeah, probable cause. You know, and the cops don't put up with this. They send one around back to look in the window, and they see what looks like a tweaker's house.
Yeah.
He's ripped out the breaker board. There's all these, you know, camp fuel stoves and things like that, gas lamps. Mm-hmm. And he's just citing law at the cops. which is tweaker behavior.
One of them calls the other back. So he is, like, giving chapter and verse on these statutes to nothing.
Yeah, very funny. Very Chuck.
Yeah.
They give him a warning. They say he's going to come in, and he goes, you know, fine, but he lays down terms.
Yeah.
Here. And they're not going to do that because they're cops. Like, imagine you just saying a cop, like, hey, you can't bring your weapons in. I don't like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't be around guns.
I'm allergic to guns, so you can't shoot me.
God, I hate this. Chuck is making us sound pro cop.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not pro cop. It's just not, it's what the world is.
Yeah. Why should you get the exception, Chuck?
Yeah, this is just how things exist. Like, and that's it's characterization, right? Like, I'm not a cop. Yeah. I don't want cops to have guns. But I think that, like, Chuck thinks he's above all this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he thinks he is very special. It's one of Chuck's problems. And, like, this is how the cops is. Mm-hmm. You can work towards reform, but that reform has to happen before you start pretending this isn't what they is.
Right.
You know, he says no tasers specifically, big fear of tasers. They kick down the door. We get a lot of Chuck vision, and they tase him.
Yeah.
The worst thing that can happen to somebody with fake taser disease.
Sorry, my body doesn't like it when you tase me.
Yeah. Do not tase me, bro.
Yeah.
We cut over to Jimmy doing his comedy clients.
Yes.
Here. And these are funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to show that Jimmy's thing did not work instantly in a way that he wanted it to, like, it ultimately does get him work, but it's steady work that does not pay more than the public defense.
It's not showy stuff. Right.
You know, it's pretty funny that this just drew wackos out of the woodwork. Like, Albuquerque is a colorful town. as we find, like, out.
Okay. You see what these tactics go to. You want to be a TV lawyer, you're going to get TV clients.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. But also just old people as well. You know, like real clients. Yeah. Like, he actually gets real work from it. I don't understand if this is trying to say something like the stunt was the reason why he got these guys, why it brought cartoons out. I don't know if that feels like it makes sense to me.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it just makes me feel like it's just not that easy. You know, like, a lot of law is this kind of stuff. You know, and again, just for jokes. Like, I'm not trying to just poke a hole in the jokes. They're both very funny jokes.
Yeah. Just the actual work that it gets him is not a showman's work like these first couple would be, right?
Yeah.
So,
first one, he's at Ricky Sipes. He has this huge ranch. He has several Hummers. Tons of, you have stuffed animals everywhere.
Yeah.
Which makes it sound very different. Like, he's got a bunch of Care Bears and shit.
Yeah,
taxidermied animals.
You call those stuffed animals.
Yeah. Who's you? You call them stuffed animals.
What? I have exclusively, if somebody doesn't say taxidermied animals, they said, oh, I have a stuffed deer's head on the wall, right?
Well, they say deer's head, but if somebody says they have a stuffed animal, you don't think of a plushie?
Yeah. I mean, it depends on who says it. Hmm. We're talking about a Yosemite Sam sovereign citizen here.
Yeah. I feel like there are stuffed animals everywhere. It makes this scene very different and also funny for Jimmy.
Yes. I'll try and be more precise.
Thank you. I just thought the line was a funny line.
I know. It's a funny, it is a funny idea. Him just in there, just holding on to
it. It's a real, the giraffes have taken over.
Yes.
Like, it's one of those things.
Ricky's kind of glazing him up, saying like, "Oh, you know, that billboard, you know, seeing you on the news told me two things. You're not afraid to get yourself out there, and you're like me. You care about the real America."
Yeah.
And he starts going into this kind of like comedy libertarian speech about how the government is grinding him to dust under its thumb when he is clearly living in a bonanza palace.
Yes. And there's, I love how Jimmy plays him. We get a good insight into Jimmy, just like picking up on it. Yep. You know, Jimmy had practiced a lie about his car. Ricky says, "It breaks my heart to see you driving that foreign piece of shit." And Jimmy's about to defend himself. And he says, you know, "It's because you can't get ahead. An American can't get ahead in this world." Mm-hmm. And Jimmy immediately pivots to, "Well, I refuse to see myself as a victim."
Yep.
The kind of thing this guy's going to respond to.
So you know? Canny. So yeah, canny.
Very canny. Yeah. He wants to secede. You know, he's just going to be a sovereign nation that is independent of the land it happens to be on. Uh-huh. You're going to be America's Vatican City. And Jimmy's like, understands this is a cash cow.
Yes.
It is nigh impossible to secede.
Yeah.
You know,
you can't do it, but this is a wealthy and delusional man who will give him a lot of work that has the potential to be high profile. Right.
Yeah.
And he doesn't jump on it and say immediately, yes. You know, he just kind of like considers it. He is treating this seriously. He says, "Ricky, I'm your man." And Ricky goes, "Yeehaw."
And then he does a big yeehaw. It's cute. And then Jimmy, you know, lays out the money part. You know, this is going to be very difficult. Thousands of man hours, maybe years. Maybe this will go to the Supreme Court. You know, my rate is $450 an hour. And Ricky says, you know, "The hell with that. I want you on retainer. You know, $1 million, $500 upfront." And this is all the money Jimmy's ever thought of. You know, he says, "That seems fair." And then he can't even say yes. He's just kind of like dumbfound when Ricky goes to get the – he says, "Do you want in cash?" Mm-hmm. And the rookie comes out and brings cash, but it's his own fun bucks. It's itchy and scratchy dollars.
Yeah. He always puts you on the 100 gribble bill.
Yeah. It's very similar. You know, and they have the paper around the face, so it takes him a second to see it. He flips through, he sees they're all just have his face on it. You know?
Son, you're getting in on the ground floor, paying him just in Montana militia money.
Yeah. Like, we don't get to see him politely decline.
Yeah,
this guy's fun money.
it's bison bucks, right?
Yeah. Next, he goes to the suburban house, has an American flag outside. This is a consultation with Roland Jaycox, who wants him to sign an NDA for his patent invention. I may as well get into patent law, he says. He does so many of them.
You know, just trying to feign experience and competence with this particular thing. And Roland says, "Oh, you know, it would be terrible if like Play School or Fisher Price got a hold of this, you know." Yeah. Big hitters, right?
Yep.
And he pulls the tarp off of this invention in his garage, and it, to all appearances, looks to be a plain toilet.
Yeah. Jimmy's not impressed by this. He says, "No, you know, my invention is this thing. You know, I don't want to bore you with the technical details, but I've added a sound chip to a motion detector. Do you have any kids? I got two." And they just don't want to use the commode. So this is Tony the toilet buddy. And he starts dropping wooden blocks in the toilet, and the toilet gives encouragement, yes, positive feedback, in a very double entendre way.
In a real, like, "Hello" voice. Yes. From Seinfeld. "Oh, yeah, that's the way."
"You're so big. You're a big boy. You fill me up.
Chandler, goodness, put it in look me. At you."
Yeah. "This is the only car I can afford." You know, "I want it all." And then the guy is talking along with it, which is really cute.
He's just mouthing along like, "Oh my gosh, this is the money shot. Like, can you believe this? It's going to revolutionize toilet training."
Yeah. Jimmy says it's a little sexual. He doesn't understand. He goes, "It's a little like suggestive."
Yeah.
You know? Listen, I'm not saying this thing won't make you rich. Some of the wealthier Pacific Rim nations, for example, they'll love this. And he's furious. He made this for kids. Yeah. This is a thing where this is more comedy than anything else. Like, the problem with this is the voice.
Yeah.
This seems like a legitimate thing you could sell. I could see this thing on Shark Tank, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if it just didn't sound like it was taking a huge dick.
Yeah. Just say, okay, well, we're going to need to work on the sayings, bud. And
we'll get an actual professional to do the voice parts.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, Roland kicks him out. You know, I made this thing for kids. You're a pervert. And he goes, you know, hey, buddy, you're the one with the sex toilet. You're going to wish you had these millions to pay for Chandler's therapy. Very funny. Yeah. Then we get the actual thing here. This is also kind of a comedy scene, but leads us into a plot for a while here. Of him doing his third consultation with an old lady, doing a meting out her will.
Yes. Mrs. Strauss, Geraldine Strauss. The comedy beat here is that the scene starts way too early. We watch as she rides this incredibly slow chairlift down her stairs. Those things are slow. We had one when my grandma was near the end. They take a very long time, and then she starts shuffling over. As happens.
It'd be amazing if they were fast. Yeah, like it's one of those things where I was thinking about this. I was watching. It's like, oh, the joke is that this is slow and that Jimmy's getting a bad return on his time.
Yeah,
you know, this is the amount of money here is important versus like public defender work. You know, like this is not going to be a way to get rich. And I was just thinking, like, if I couldn't go up the stairs, this is about as fast as I'd want it to go.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, yeah. I'm not, going upstairs, I'm not that big of a hurry.
Yeah, I'm not in a huge hurry, actually. Yeah.
There's some, what is the, it's in the comic book Preacher. I think one of these things goes too fast and shoots somebody out a window, maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. I've seen that happen.
That's about all you can do with it comedy wise. Yeah. I think that it's either too slow or too fast. Exactly. Otherwise it's just a grim necessity of. Right.
Yeah. It's just able at
that point. Yeah. Yeah.
Just right. Chandler, bring me up the stairs at the right speed, Chandler. Oh yeah.
But also, this wasn't necessary. She didn't need to bring him the Alpine Shepherd boy.
No,
to show him, she just needed to. She just needed to say, like, "Hey, I've got this one." But she wanted to show it off. She's lonely, yeah. And she's really proud of this collection. She is drowning in Hummel figurines.
Yes, and Jimmy is doing very intense, irritating work. He's doing a good job at it, though.
Yes,
he's paying a lot of attention to this woman's family tree and who gets what. Shepherd, you know, what Hummel figurine and for why.
Yeah.
You know, like, and he's really charming with her. He cracks jokes with her and it works. Like, she loves it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, if I were 40 years younger, I'd have you buy me a pina colada.
And he says, let me drop a quick DNR and we can do that. Do not resuscitate. Like, it's like a dark joke for an old lady, but like, it just kind of goes by her.
Yeah, you know, Moxie's in such short supply these days, which is going to be a little tagline later on. I love Mrs. Strauss. Yeah. But he tells her, like, hey, you know, my fee is $140. And she, you know, goes through her wallet and pulls out the cash. Like, this is way better per hour than PD work, right? He was getting $750 per case, the whole case from pretrial to, you know, everything, way more hours than this. This is reasonable.
It's reasonable, but it's not going to get him where he wants to go.
Right.
Like, he did this big stunt. He did something that he, you know, he promised Chuck he wouldn't do anymore in order to get this. And he was probably expecting more than this, you know?
Yeah.
He ends up leaning into it for a little while, but the kind of will he, won't he actually do elder law?
Mm-hmm.
And how much is he invested in elder law is kind of like a running theme for the beginning of the show.
Yes.
We got to the nail salon. He's painting Kim's toenails here. You know, cute lived-in dialogue with them. They should all be as big as the big one. I can do that one. Love that. Like, you should have feet like Ninja Turtle.
But he's imitating the toilet. Oh, where does it end?
It's really good. You know, and he says, you know, he's like, this is our day. Like, I did two of these and started a living trust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, $300 for a day's work is fine for a lawyer, right? Mm. You know, and she says, like, even your lousy days are more interesting than my good ones. And he's going to start plying his thing, getting her out of there. You know, maybe we should do something about that. And she is charmed by him at this point.
And she says, hey, you know, maybe you should specialize in elder law. And she has experience with this. She wanted to do something like that early on in her career. She saw what her grandma went through near the end. It was like, yeah, everybody's always trying to scam old people. They have money that they want to make sure goes the right place. Like it's an actual, if unglamorous need.
Yes. This train of thought gets cut off by Howard calling Kim. Kim has to pretend she doesn't know where Jimmy is. It's breaking the news about Chuck.
Yeah.
And we cut over to Jimmy in the hospital room, turning off all the electronics, kind of freaking out.
Being a maniac because he's trying to protect his brother. You know, he's climbing up on chairs and turning off fixtures and stuff.
Yeah. We get introduced to Dr. Cruz here, played by the great Clea DuVall, who I know from Carnival. She's great.
I love her.
You know, he eventually, he calms down enough and they turn off the lights and, she gives the rundown on what happened basically.
Yeah.
They didn't call me, but there was no ID on him. There's just a business card. That's how we got a hold of Howard. He should be committed for this. This should be a 30-day psychological evaluation for this.
Right.
And, Chuck unfortunately wakes up. Chuck's a lawyer. I love this scene, like everything about this scene.
Oh yeah.
And this kind of being a thing where like ultimately it's going to turn out Chuck being, committed or having psychological help would be good for him.
The
thing he thinks he needs it for, and is ultimately going to lead to his downfall.
Yeah.
Like this is one of those things that happens where like a character casually talks about saving another character's life without them knowing it.
And she has the gift of prophecy from Apollo. She says like, you're a danger. You might be a danger to anybody else. You know, what if one of your lamps falls over? The fact that Chuck wakes up at this, I think is important too, because he needs to intervene. Like him being comatose, quote unquote, up to this point was advantageous. You know, he let Jimmy didn't make an ass of himself. Doing all this, but here's the thing where he went, I don't want to. It's a matter of pride for him that this is a physical condition, not a psychological one. You know, she asks him to explain this, the situation. He explains his condition and all of the symptoms are pretty much panic attack symptoms.
Yeah. It's a real, real mixed grill of stuff. And I love Jimmy in the scene as well. Like Jimmy genuinely does care about his comfort, through this. He's trying to ask, when it started about 2 years ago. And Chuck, realizes like, oh, you think I'm crazy. When you ask Kim to vouch for him, and I love this, Kim won't do it. Kim's just like, I'm not a doctor.
Yeah.
nobody believes this. Like Kim also doesn't believe it. Everyone's indulging this man because of the respect they have for him.
Yes.
It is a
huge gift for which Chuck is not grateful.
Exactly. Like he does not know how good he has it, in terms of specifically the thing that Jimmy also wants, right? Like the reason these two characters work together is they want what the other one has. Through this. He says, have I ever exhibited any signs of mental illness? She doesn't answer. He starts saying, he starts saying the law about commitment. It has to be the minimum amount of invasion. Don't you think that like putting me under this torture would not be that?
Yeah.
And then she does a thing where she says, I have a question. If you'll indulge me, how do you adapt to daily life? And while she does this, or while he answers, she turns on the bed.
Yeah.
Jimmy and Kim both notice this.
Yeah. And Chuck doesn't react. It's very, very important that he needs to be aware of the source of the electricity in order for it to be something that hurts him, even something that he pretends. Yeah.
Yes. She's going to go talk to Jimmy in the hallway. Chuck says, make sure you still keep your wallet, and then tells Jimmy to take him home, which is sad and true, sad and comes from a real place.
Yeah.
I love this little bit here where, Jimmy says to the doctor, like, that was a dirty trick. And she's like, no, it's a demonstration.
Yeah.
Like, and they get into this thing and Dr. Cruz is just correct about all this stuff.
Yeah.
He is endangering himself. You are enabling him.
Mm-hmm.
You think he's not a danger to himself or others. He can burn down the whole neighborhood and then he's going to be committed for 20 years.
Yeah.
you know, if that happens.
Like, this is the this is not doing him the favor that you think he that you think you are. And like, she even gets him to admit that, like, yeah, you know, maybe some of this isn't real. You know, Jimmy's kind of falling back to the line right here, you know, just like, okay, well, the pain is real. Like, his distress is real.
Yeah, he's smarter than both of us. So we're not going to be able to convince him.
Mm-hmm.
You have this, like, it's real enough in his mind and he can outmaneuver us in this. You know, you get the sense he's tried this before, and we're going to get this literally acknowledged later when they're talking, like they've had this discussion before. And we've even seen it, you know, take off the space blanket, you know, Jimmy knows what's going on, you know, and Jimmy doesn't know what to do. He could get him committed. He asked Kim, he's, you know, all I know, and Kim doesn't know. She says, all I know is that he needs help. And Jimmy goes, I, you know, I can't do this now. I'm taking him home.
Yeah.
But then Howard shows up. and this is, again, it's interesting the degrees of which, like, people's genuine feelings are at play here. And then also the things they know. You know, like, I think Howard genuinely cares for Chuck. I don't know that he necessarily believes in the thing. You know, believes in the EMS. But, like, he's here because he cares about Chuck. He's not here for the reason Jimmy thinks.
Right. Jimmy is taking the most cynical read on him, you know, because there is this conflict between them, you know? And so Chuck says, you know, then we're just going to do whatever we can to get him home. And this makes Jimmy pretend to change his mind, saying like, oh, well, you know, okay, well, if Chuck is committed, then I take guardianship. You want to make sure that he is not committed, because if I take guardianship, I can cash him out. Takes away your cash cow. You know, he says, I was on the fence, but now you've made my decision for me. I'm going to commit Chuck.
Yep. He walks away. Kim catches up to him and he says, I'm going to get him home. I just wanted to make him sweat.
Yeah.
You know, we get the scene, you know, back home where Chuck asks Jimmy for the space blanket. Jimmy grabs it. He doesn't like it. And he sees the newspaper. You know, he draws the connection. He knew that the newspaper was stolen before. You know, he knew this was coming. He says, you know, should we talk about this? You know, listen, you know, whenever you think that I've done something wrong or something questionable, you get worse. But this is not a return of Slip and Jimmy. Like, I, you know, this is advertising here. And Chuck just, you know, we've had this argument too many times. I'm too tired. You know, advertising for your law business wasn't even legal until five Supreme Court justices lost their mind. You know, and he's just trying to convince him. And I love Chuck just being like, we'll see.
You know?
Can't do it. He can't just like absolve him, which is all he wants.
No. And like here in privacy, Jimmy doesn't even pretend that what happened was on the straight and narrow, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, he knows that Chuck can see through, you know, can't pretend that it's just a coincidence.
Yeah. He can lie to everybody except for Chuck.
Right.
Yeah.
You know. And you know, I love this, the, you know, like, oh, the argument that we're too tired of. Is it like, which one? Is it Jimmy? You know, Jimmy's shaky ethics or the nature of the condition? And it's both, right?
Yeah, because they're so intertwined.
Yeah.
You know?
And Jimmy tries to, you know, throw him off and say, like, no, I am going on the straight and narrow. I'm thinking of specializing in elder law. And the flippancy with which Chuck disregards this.
Yeah.
Just like, this is so kind of like beneath his like highfalutin white shoe law firm stuff.
Wait, and also, he doesn't care.
Yeah.
You know, Jimmy can only cause him pain. He takes everything that is good from Jimmy for granted.
Yes.
Like 100% for granted. Jimmy is just an on or off switch for terror and pain. You know, there's nothing Jimmy can do.
Right.
You know, so he says, Chuck eventually goes, okay, leaves to go get leaves a space blanket behind, gets up to make the coffee.
Yeah.
He's actually fine. Conversation over.
Yes.
Get a really quick scene of Jimmy watching Matlock and making notes about the suit. I love Jimmy's drawing of like absolute giant Attack on Titan Matlock.
Oh yeah, giant Matlock with proportions like he's the Stop Making Sense suit.
Yes. Yeah, Stop Making Sense suit Matlock.
Uh-huh.
Really good.
Oh my gosh. But he's, you know, he's got the money. He knows how to mimic, how to duplicate suits just by low res television, image. And he's going to Matlockify himself. Yeah. Matlock being a joke people know from The Simpsons. It was an old legal sitcom where Andy Griffith plays a country lawyer who shows the youth punks and the arrogant city slickers, you know, what's what in the courtroom.
There's a current remake of that that's going on.
Kathy Bates, I think.
Yeah, which is good casting. Mm-hmm. I always half suspected Matlock would be watchable.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like a law show. Law shows are watchable. Andy Griffith is charismatic enough.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm sure it's fine. It's just,
I was like, oh yeah, I bet you that's watchable.
Yeah. I bet you it passes the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You cut to him in an old folks home being charming. You know, this is the same old folks home that Hector is at. And the orderlies wheel out the Jell-O, and he has made a little advertising thing in the bottom of the Jell-O with his logo and a little cartoon picture of him. It says, "Need a will, call McGill."
Right. This is solicitation.
Yes.
This is not something you're supposed to do. But he's making a go of it. He's the Jell-O sponsor.
Yeah. You know, and if the episode had just been called Jell-O, it just would have been so much more powerful.
It really would have resonated, and they missed it. So Jamie's out like working the room dressed up like Matlock, you know, and saying, like, oh, watch out. That's my will writing hand. Just doing crowd work, right? Ingratiating himself. And he's good at it.
He's really good at it, you know, and he does not know how to be a lawyer without doing it.
Right.
You know, and some level he does not see why he shouldn't.
Yeah.
You know, he's good at these two things. Once he actually starts doing law stuff, like with the Mesa Verde stuff, he's going to actually... or not Mesa Verde. Is it Mesa Verde the old folks home or the bank?
Sandpiper is the old folks home. Sandpiper. Mesa Verde is the bank. Yeah.
The Sandpiper stuff, like he actually does advocate for these people. Mm-hmm. You know, he does fucking detective work. He does good. He is a good lawyer. He just can't divorce this other talent he has from it and doesn't really see why he should.
Yeah.
You know, if it all ends up in the wash, ends up the same in the wash. This obviously flies in the face of Chuck, who is just like, you know, do everything right and earn it the way I did.
Yes.
You know, and this is earning it. Like it's hard for me to see, yes, you're not supposed to do solicitation. It's hard for me to feel like this is that big of a deal personally, like morally.
Yeah.
You know, and that difference between morals and legal, like Jimmy being willing to do illegal things that are not immoral is the difference between them until eventually he does start doing things that are extremely immoral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we cut to nighttime. And Jimmy pulls up to the parking lot, the booth where Mike is to leave, you know, long day working for his clients. And he gives Mike his card. You know, I'm specializing in elder law. Give me a call if you happen to know any elders. You know, Mike just gives him a look that melts him.
I love this. I love this line from Mike where he's like, what are you reading? The rules for parking enforcement? And he goes, that's actually pretty simple. Most people get it on the first try, you know, and he pulls away and we stick with Mike. It's really interesting as a shot. The morning shift takes over. He goes to his diner that he goes to. We see him watching his daughter leave for work. She pulls behind him. She sees him, but they don't say anything. He returns home to watch an old Mike movie. When he hears people show up, pull up and sees shadows in the window, grabs a bat, but it's two detectives in a police escort who he recognizes.
Our second set of blowjob brothers, the ones from Philly.
Yeah, the Philly blowjob brothers.
Yeah. He says, you're a long way from home, aren't you? This ultra detective says, you and me both. Yeah. You know, Mike is fresh here. We're going to learn.
Yeah. And we're going to learn why he left. And it's a lot of good stuff.
God, I love this that episode so much.
Me too. It's the idea that expanding to being a prequel about the other characters who are around is really smart.
Yeah.
And like we talked about this when we first started talking about the show. Part of my skepticism of a Better Call Saul show was just like, is there enough to Jimmy? You know, and there's plenty to Jimmy. Is there enough for six seasons? Not really.
Three seasons.
You know, like, yeah, it's like three seasons worth of stuff being like, no, we want to know how everyone else got here too is, I think, a cool move.
Yes.
And would not trade it for anything else. And then also with Nacho, a new main character.
Yeah.
We get to see who I love as well. So good stuff on the horizon.
Good stuff. Get ready for a good monologue next week.
What can people do if they like the show?
If people like this show, they can back us at Patreon, patreon.com/duckfeedtv, get a whole bunch of bonus content. If you like our shows about media, we do a show about horror movies that comes out monthly. That's at the $5 tier, Unfilmable, where we just talked about The Thing as you're listening to us.
Yeah. You get all the back episodes of that stuff too.
Yeah.
So jump in. And we appreciate that. Also, leave us ratings, reviews, Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, wherever there are reviews. And make sure you join us and thank you, our producer, Gwen, who also composed the theme music.
Thank you, Gwen.
Yeah. And until next time, don't put away the space blanket.
Yeah. Just take it off, bud. It's really hell on the mic.